We have kind of sanitized love and personalized it. And I'm not quite sure why this is, but so I want to take off those wrappings. We are Sufis and we're in the business of what love really is, whether it's this sip of pure wine that completely intoxicates you, that, as in the story of Attar, makes the merchant lose everything, even his mind, until he just wanders like a bewildered idiot, not knowing what happened. Or in the kind of more violent aspect of love, this love that obliterates you, that destroys you, this sword soaked in blood. Somehow, particularly in North America, we are in the habit of personalizing everything. And when you talk about love, you think of personal relationships. Of course, if you've done some psychology, you then get completely immersed in the love you had or didn't have from your mother. Well, I don't have to go into it, but... and love has nothing to do with that. I have a strong personal opinion that 80% of what most people call love is actually emotion. And emotion, I don't know if you're aware of, belongs to the lower centers of you. It actually belongs to the hara center, the life force center. That's where you feel emotions. You don't feel emotions in the heart. And there's something very simple, because if you get a state of meditation, you can leave your emotional body behind and you go into the heart. And there are no emotions in the heart. The heart is not an emotional body. I'll give you a very simple example. When you die, you take your love with you, and you do not take your emotions with you. So please, let's leave that image of love behind. I want to talk about love and the power of love. My sheikh, he said, love is the greatest power in creation. He doesn't say it's something you work out with your parents. And sadly, you know, again, real love does not, it is reflected in personal relations, yes. Most of the time, sadly, personal relationships end up as being patterns of codependency and emotional entanglements and an enormous amount of projection. Yes, if you are lucky, if there is a real connection from heart to heart, there is love, there is compassion, there is understanding, yes. There is this saying, I think in the Upanishads, not for the sake of the wife is the wife dear, but for the sake of the Atma of the wife is the wife dear. Not for the sake of the husband is the husband dear, but for the sake of the Atma of the husband is the husband dear. Because the real relationship is from higher self to higher self, from Atma to Atma, because that is where love is. Love belongs to the self. Once you have an experience of that, it is pure love. It is the ocean of love. It is the real thing. And so, yes, in a personal relationship, there can be love. And if you really work with a relationship from the perspective of unconditional love, it can be a tremendous growth experience. But there does come a time when that has to be left behind too, because that is just an image of something. That is just a reflection of something. I always remember Coleman Barks saying, when Hallmark Cards wanted to use some of his translations of Rumi, and he said, you know, I don't think it's the sort of love you really want in your cards. Because this is a love that annihilates, that destroys, that obliterates. It is not something you want to send to your grandmother on Grandmother's Day or whatever it is you have. Or even on Valentine's Day, you know. I mean, if you want your love to stab right through the heart of your beloved, to tear out the heart and to turn it back to God. Yes, sure. But... but we are in the business of love. To learn to be a lover. To learn to be loved. To learn to put yourself on the altar of love. Or as we were taught, into the arena of love. There is... traditionally in Sufism, this moment when after the years of preparation, after all the dilly-dallying around the sides, after all the excuses, like in Attar's Conferences of the Birds, all the myriad excuses you make, there comes this time when you say, okay, now let's do it. And you step into the arena of love. And we were taught there is this one statement you make when you step into the arena of love. Morituri te salutant imperator, like the gladiators of Rome. Those about to die salute thee. That is about the only words you get allowed to speak. Then it's up to him, up to the great beloved. Then it's the real thing. It is the love that takes out your heart or that turns your heart. I remember years ago in my 20s when I had this experience, I didn't know what it meant then, in which somebody came from behind and they took out my heart and they breathed on it and then they put it back. That meant, strictly speaking, my heart no longer belonged to me. Somebody took it out. Somebody put somebody else's breath on it. Because that is the real sacrifice we make on the Sufi path. We give our heart to the beloved. The rest we get to keep for ourselves. Look, we get to keep our mind most of the time for ourselves. Our physical body, yeah, that's ours. You know, gets a few more wrinkles as you get older. A few more aches and pains. Our emotions, well, that's your own emotions. But our heart belongs to our beloved. To do with as he wills, they say, he holds the heart of the faithful between his two fingers, and he turns it as he wills. Sometimes he turns our heart towards him, and you get these states of nearness, these states of intimacy, these states of bliss. These states of incredible sweetness. And then he turns the heart away, back to the world, away from his intimacy. And then you get those days of desolation, those days that stretch endlessly from horizon to horizon, when the beloved seems to be no longer there. That is the sacrifice we make. We give this most precious part of ourselves, our heart, back to God. Do with it as thou wilt. I am just here for your sake. And then we have to live it. One thing is to step into the arena of love. And then it is to live in the arena of love for the rest of your life. Not knowing. And finally, not caring. Now that is this inner relationship, this inner axis of love which we are privileged to experience. And please, I use the word privileged very, very specifically. It is a tremendous privilege to belong to God. You say everything belongs to God. Yes. Everything, every leaf on the tree, every politician in Washington belongs to God. Of course they do. There is nothing other than him. Everything is a revelation of him. But there is this step in the incarnation of the soul when you consciously give yourself back to your beloved. When you fulfill that ancient pledge, am I not your Lord? Yes, we witness it. And you bring that innermost pledge of the soul into consciousness. Into the breath, into the awareness. Piazzi was talking about the importance of awareness of the breath. Why? Because the breath is life. Without the breath, there would be no life. And you bring that pledge of the soul back from the ancient memories stored within you, back from that pre-eternal moment when the souls were with God. And you say, beloved, now I live it. Of course, you forget it, but then you remember. And there comes a time when all of those years of struggling to remember and all of the pain of forgetfulness dissolves. This is what the Sufis call the state of baqa, abiding in God. When you become the remembrance of God in the world, when you are a place of His remembrance of Himself in His creation, then you are a Sufi. Until then, you were walking on the road. Now, the breath goes into the world and back. It comes from the soul, comes from the innermost recesses, and goes into the world and back. And love also does the same. Love is like the breath of God. It is beautiful that you can go in meditation to a place where you see love coming out of the infinite emptiness. For many years, I couldn't understand something my sheikh said to Mrs. Tweedy. He said, there comes a time when even the love will go. Didn't understand that. I remember somebody also had a dream in which they said to the sheikh, I love you. And he said in the dream, there will come the time when each of those three little words will go. There will be no I, there will be no love, and there will be no you. Because there is actually a place deep in the very core of one's being, in the emptiness, in that which is before existence, where there is no love. The love has not yet come into existence. It is very, very cold, very desolate, very empty place. I find it infinitely beautiful. There is only a little fragment of consciousness there. Only a little something to see what is not. Doesn't make much sense, but that is the best I can explain it. And then there is this like light. At that time it is still a dark light of love. That comes, that is born there in the emptiness, in non-existence. It's the first hint of creation. And then slowly it comes into the world and it becomes this whole magnificent creation. And again, for some reason in our culture, I don't know why, it is a strange culture we live in, I often think, a strange time. We have forgotten that everything is love. We have forgotten that the substance of everything is love. Because how can anything not be love? I suppose this is because we have kind of perfumed love and we've put it in personal relations and we tried to find it in the therapist room. I don't know. But God is love. Our beloved is love. And He made the world out of His own substance, and His own substance is love. I always remember somebody who came to our center was for a retreat, and she told me, she walked up the hill, we have a hill that goes to the meditation room, and she walked up there, and on the way, she had the experience that every leaf on every tree was made of love. I looked at the light in her eyes, it was so beautiful, it was like a curtain had been lifted, and for a moment she had glimpsed the mystery of creation, that everything in creation is love, because of course it is love. What else could it be? In the same way as every blade of grass, every bird sings the praises of God. Of course it does. It is His world. How could it be otherwise? It is strange that we have forgotten that. Well, we have forgotten so many things, more than we can ever remember, I suppose. But everything in creation is love. When you meet somebody, it is love meeting love. And you can experience that. I always say a simple thing. You can touch a table with love and you feel the table respond. How can a table respond? Because a table is also love. But nobody notices that it's love, so it just pretends to be just a table. It's the same with human beings. If you approach a human being with love, something in them wakes up. Something in them rejoices. Somebody notices that I am love. The lover standing alone and forlorn in the marketplace is for a moment seen for what he is, a lover. Not just a person, not just a wayfarer, not just a tramp. But a bit of love longing for its beloved. Everything is the reed torn from the reed bed. Everything is the cry of the soul. Because I am a hidden treasure and I long to be loved, so I created the world. Everything is love looking for its beloved. It's such a relief that, you know, you just step outside of yourself and you step into this whole drama of love. This whole extraordinary orgasmic experience of love. Because everything is being recreated with love every moment. The people you are now are not the same as those who came in 15 minutes ago. I can assure you, you have already been recreated with love. Already, each moment, love is recreating itself. Love is re-experiencing itself. And the beauty is that, because I say we have this privilege of being Sufis, we are allowed to consciously participate in this revelation of love. If we can, of course, for a moment, step outside of ourselves and all of the ego and all of that drama you know only too well. Then you realize we are love recreating itself, re-experiencing itself, each moment. Each moment is different. Each moment is this, it's the beloved breathing in and breathing out with love. It's very simple.